Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Osprey Medical Quarterly Investor Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mike McCormick, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Osprey Medical's quarterly results call for the period December 31st, 2018. I'm glad to be joined on this call by Nancy Ness, Osprey CFO, and Tom Duthie, who's in charge of investor relations for Osprey. Earlier today, Osprey released its Appendix 4C for the fourth quarter of 2018. I would like to update you on these results and the growth of our business throughout the quarter. Before diving into the details, I wanted to give you a quick summary of the key highlights of the quarter. Quarterly revenues of $714,000 were up 45% versus prior corresponding period. In other words, Q4 of 2018 versus Q4 of 2017, we had 45% growth in revenues. Divert unit sales revenue of 2,145 units was up 56% versus the prior corresponding period. Cash receipts of $654,000 were up 37% versus prior corresponding period. And we ended the quarter with a strong cash balance sheet of U.S. $25.3 million, and that was on December the 31st of 2018. It was a really successful commercial period for Osprey, and it marked the 17th quarter of consecutive revenue growth since we started commercializing in the United States. For 17 quarters, our core commercial strategy of a direct sales force remains unchanged. We feel this is the best way to introduce new technologies like Divert that fills an unmet clinical need, like making coronary angiograms, which is a common heart procedure, safer for patients with poor kidney function. Introducing new medical devices is never automatic, but we are very proud of the 17 quarters of growth that we have had, and we're excited that the sales team, which includes reps, clinicals, and managers that total 32 people that are in place to drive further growth throughout 2019. For the remainder of my comments, I will detail the accomplishments of our direct sales force in the quarter, as well, since it was the final quarter of the calendar year, as well as the full calendar year. I'll also highlight some of our key programs, like our GPO contracts that are aimed at accelerating our future growth. So for Q4 and a few highlights on the full year 2018, in Q4 we had strong unit sales growth and stable selling prices and strong cash conversion. Divert units in Q4 were up 17% versus Q3 of 2018. We sold 2,145 units in Q4 of 2019, which was up 56% over Q4 of 2008. I'm sorry, that was 2018, and that's 56% up over 17. Full year unaudited 2018 unit sales were 7,201, which is up 57% versus 2017. As of the end of Q4 2018, we had 137 hospitals who have purchased the Divert system. And guys, when you compare that to December the 31st of last year, that's up 40% year over year. Average selling price for the Divert, excluding the GPO fees, in Q4 of 2018 was at $354. That's the price that we sell it to the end user hospital. Revenues were up 45% over the prior corresponding year period, and they were at $714,000. And revenues on the full year 2018, unaudited, were $2.5 million. That was up 54% over full year 2017. Cash receipts were at $654,000 in Q4, which was up 37% over prior year corresponding period. A few comments about our GPO strategy. In calendar year 2018, we announced four contractual relationships with multi-hospital systems that are called GPOs, or group purchasing organizations. In the fourth quarter, we announced the largest of those, which was Premier. It's one of the largest GPOs in the United States, and they have 4,000 hospitals within their network. In total, the four agreements in the United States that we got in 2018 allow hospitals at their discretion to take advantage of the Divert system with pre-negotiated pricing and terms, and it will allow them to bring it in faster. As previously advised to the market, securing these GPO agreements has been a critical part of our growth strategy at Osprey. As the U.S. healthcare system moves toward more volume-based pricing models that show superior outcomes and lower costs, more and more hospitals are members of multiple of these multi-hospital system or GPOs. These agreements will provide Osprey's technology to over 50% of the hospitals in the United States who do angiography or heart procedures on patients with poor kidneys. And it's at a contracted, pre-negotiated contract price of $350,350. And then we pay administrative fees of 5% back to the multi-hospital system on a quarterly basis. We expect these agreements will reduce the time it takes for Osprey to acquire new accounts, and it'll serve as a foundation for us to increase penetration of all the patients with chronic kidney disease in the hospital. Finally, during Q4, during the fourth quarter of 2018, Osprey successfully raised $14.3 million from a new investor, Alan Gray, as well as existing investors at 15.5 cents per share. These funds will allow the company to continue to accelerate our GPO-focused growth strategies and strengthen our balance sheet. And our balance sheet ended on December 31st at $25.3 million. That gives you a quick overview of our results in the fourth quarter of 2018. And now I'd like to open up the call to anyone that might have questions on hold.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone and wait for your name to be announced. If you need to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please ensure you pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Steve Whelan from Evans & Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Steve Ween here. Just a quick question, just based on the units. Can you can you quantify the number of units that might have gone through the new GPO arrangements, and also the units via your European distributor? Just trying to reconcile that revenue number based on the units sold.
Yeah. So good. Good question, Steve. So in terms of, first off, I'll comment on our European sales. So in terms of our European sales is still in its very early stage. We've got a pilot agreement with a distributor based in Italy. And then within the UK, we also have a distributor in the UK, although that one is very early. So just quickly on our strategies and what those two entities are. So first off, in Italy, we focus in that market because they're very focused on AKI, acute kidney injury, and they've got a lot of thought leaders there. So that's why we focused on that market. In the UK, it's much more of a focal strategy to get NICE approval, which is an endorsement from the government in the paying system to approve our technology. So that gives you an idea of our approach. Now, within revenues within those two countries, it represents less. It's immaterial to the total dollar value of what we sold. So we don't comment specifically on revenues from outside the United States. We do anticipate in the future we will comment on those once they get the materiality, and materiality from a GAAP perspective or general accounting principles perspective is at 10% or more. So that's when we'll comment on that. In terms of the GPOs, we did have quite a bit of revenue that went through the GPOs, but we're not at the stage where we'll detail that out. And in fact, our contractual relationships with the GPOs, they would prefer that we not detail revenues that were specifically within GPOs. So we don't comment on that in respect for those agreements with them. But certainly it was a key part of our growth this last quarter.
Okay. Okay. And just on the, you sort of made some reference to the EZ, the latest generation, I guess, of the divert. Can you just sort of talk about compositionally, is that the majority of the sales, or how does the split between the various products, Divert, Divert Plus, and the EZ fall out?
It's a great question. So on the EZ, as many people on the line might remember, we announced this when it released, and it basically, as the name implies, it's a bit easier to prime this device as compared to the Divert Plus. They're both priced the exact same. They both give the same benefit. The primary priming difference is the Divert Plus takes about a couple of minutes to prime that or to prep it for each patient, where the EZ takes seconds to prime or prep for each patient. We expected when we launched it that product would become our number one selling product, and we expect that to take over sometime in Q2 of this calendar year. It's certainly on pace to do that. From its introduction in Q4, customers really appreciated the convenience, and they moved rapidly toward that platform. Not everyone, but quite a few of them, and so it's certainly on track with where we expect it to be. And we do expect it to be well over 75% of our sales by Q2 of this year.
Okay, and is there a price premium for that additional functionality, or it's the same price?
Same price, $350 to the GPO, that's the GPO price. And since a lot of our customers are GPOs, that's a contracted price.
Okay, and so in terms of R&D spend, is there other generations that you're working on at the moment, or do we expect a bit of a lull perhaps in some of the R&D spend in the next few quarters?
Yeah, we do continue to spend in R&D, and as many of you may have seen in some of our previous presentations, the big opportunity, the one that we flagged to the market, is we're working on a power injectable compatible system. So power injectors, many hospitals use those for big volume injections, and some hospitals use them for coronary injections. And so we have a product that's coming out that will be power injectable compatible, and we expect to have that product in the market this year. So R&D continues to enhance our offering with additional products.
Okay. Any update you can give us on DITECT?
Yeah, if you look at that's a good question. So we don't detail in specific DITECT. DITECT is a great product, but it's also one that always follows Divert Plus. If you're looking in terms of total units that we sold for the quarter, we were right at about 2,300 total units. So certainly we had some units of DITECT that were in there. It goes up and down per quarter, and it always is. It's a selective product that goes to customers who are already Divert Plus users that want to have continuous monitoring.
Okay. Could I just go back and revisit the question I made about the GPOs? You were originally already selling to hospitals that come under the umbrella of the GPOs that you now have done an arrangement with. Is there new hospitals from the latest GPO arrangements that are buying as part of those 137 hospitals, or are we just seeing the existing arrangements that you have, or the existing customers now just being sold through the GPO? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, sure. So do we have new customers? Do we have a mix of new as well as existing? Certainly when we signed a GPO agreement, some of the existing hospitals were members of the GPO. But since we've signed those agreements, have we added new? We certainly have. What I can tell you is the vast majority of the sales last quarter were to existing accounts. We always have new accounts that sign on, but they were to existing accounts. That doesn't mean we didn't sign on new ones. It's the way that our ordering patterns go is when a new account signs up, it's never a gigantic bolus where it's 50 or 100 units that somebody buys when they sign up. The normal order size for us is 10 to 20 units. That's a normal order size. We ship it in boxes of 10. So 10 to 20 units, and they ship as their inventory levels get low. So we do certainly have added new customers from the GPO mix, and we did have some existing customers already when we signed those GPOs, but we certainly have added some new ones.
Okay, great. And sorry to keep going with questions, but the sales force, at the time of signing those GPOs, you were looking at bringing on additional sales staff to sell into the areas that you didn't cover that were where some of the hospitals were located amongst those GPOs. Has that happened or is that still to come?
It's in process. We have 32 in the sales force now, and we continue to look at all the areas in the GPO network to make sure that we've got strong coverage in those areas.
Okay. So yeah. So there's no increase in that sales force yet. That'll come in future quarters.
Correct.
Okay, and any color you can give us, this is the last one for me, any color you can give us just on increasing penetration within existing hospitals?
Yeah, what I can, I can give you some, as we look at Q4, and if you look at the growth rate that we had in Q4, and you just compare that to the previous quarter, so we had a 17% growth in Q4 versus Q3. Where did that come from in the distribution of new customers versus penetration of existing customers? Certainly there was new customers that were signed up in the quarter, but the vast majority of our sales come from existing customers and growing penetration in existing customers. And we were really pleased. The GPO contracts, one of our goals was to sign up new customers, and we certainly had GPO contracts, or we had new GPO-based hospitals that signed up in Q4. But more impressively, the second part of that of our strategy was to drive increased penetration or make sure that we get more and more of the bad kidney patients covered from the within the existing customers, and we certainly did that. So the majority of our growth in Q4 was from increased penetration in existing accounts.
Excellent. That's all for me. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. The next question comes from John Hester from Bell Potter Securities. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mike. Steve's actually covered off most of the material that I was going to ask. So I just wanted to ask one question about your clinical program and the updates that you've got in the pipeline for the market regarding real-world outcomes for patients from the various clinical trials that you've been conducting.
That's a great question, John, because I didn't flag that, so I'm glad you asked it. We are actually really pleased. As we enter into calendar year 2019, gosh, we already have 5 papers that have been accepted for publication in the first half of 2019. I'll highlight a couple of examples of that. There's a meeting going on the first 3 days of this week. It's called the ISET meeting. And there's a presentation being done there on our technology. The NCDR meeting is in March, and there's 3 presentations at the NCDR that are going to be on our technology. And then the ACC, the American College of Cardiology, there's 2 there. We also expect this one; those have all been accepted. So meetings are you have to submit well in advance, and it's not us submitting. These are doctors and hospitals that submit this information, and they share with us when they get them accepted. So those are ones that doctors and hospitals have submitted and have been accepted. We also anticipate things that have been submitted, and we anticipate they will get published. Is we have a journal article that's been submitted around the premier healthcare databases, burden of illness for AKI. We expect that to be published about mid-year timeframe. It's also been accepted at the ACC, so it will be presented at the ACC. We expect the manuscript to be published in the first half of this year. So, it's the strongest entry into a year with so many publications that have already been accepted, not presented yet, but accepted.
And just one other, the partial government shutdown that's occurred in Washington over the last couple of weeks, any impact for you this quarter, do you think?
You know, we always have, even though it doesn't always appear this way, we do have different technology updates and upgrades that are constantly within the FDA. And so there could be a slight impact to those, but we don't comment a lot on what the future technology platforms are going to look like. So no material impact to anything that we currently sell. VA hospitals, we have a lot of those that buy from us. They currently continue to buy. There is no reduction at VA hospitals of payments. So no impact to any of our core revenue uptake in the United States currently at all from the government shutdown. The FDA is a little bit slower on timelines, but that won't materially affect in any way any of our revenues that we anticipate for this year.
Okay. And have you got any guidance statement for this next quarter?
I would expect this next quarter that we would be at double-digit growth. This quarter we were double-digit growth versus the previous quarter, so versus Q3. I certainly expect that to happen again this year. We will continue to report over prior corresponding year, and gosh, I would expect that growth rate in Q1 to be at least 50% above prior year quarter one.
Yep.
So 2019, at least 50% above 2018.
So 2145 just versus first quarter 18, which is 1430. It's already 150% up, yeah, at least. Okay. All right. Thanks, Mike. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from Matthias Smith from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I'll dredge through the remains of questions that I've seen Williams left us, which is not many. I just want to get a little bit more detail on the current sales effort. You said there's 32 people currently. Can you provide a breakdown of the roles in there and also what the plans are going forward, and I guess finally what the approximate cost of that sales effort is?
Sure. So we got 32 people in the sales organization. I'll break them down specifically so that everybody can see exactly where they fall. We have 19 sales territories, sales reps. Those are existing sales geographies where the sales happen. So there's 19 of those. Within those, we have 8 clinical specialists. So about half of them have clinical specialists in them. Some of them share clinical specialists too. The clinical specialist is the support person. The sales rep goes out and opens new accounts. The clinical specialist traditionally helps support those and drive utilization. We also have 3 sales managers that help manage the field and manage the sales areas. And then national accounts, the GPOs, we have 2 in national accounts, 2 folks in national accounts, one that helps negotiate the national accounts, and the other one that is an application specialist. In other words, when it gets down to the account detail and meeting with the directors of the national accounts on the local level, that's what that person does, so 2 in national accounts. So that's a grand total of 32. And in terms of quarterly spend and where is our cash burn, gosh, from a sales and marketing perspective, it runs at about 55% of what we spend on a quarterly basis is in sales and marketing. We do expect that to come down in 2019 as revenues continue to grow.
Okay, I'll try and back that out. But you're saying that sales force is around 50% of your current spend?
Yes.
Okay. And where do you see that? What are the aspirations for that 32, say, by the end of the year?
Yeah, I would expect the area that we expect growth in is in the sales rep area. So we have 19 sales reps today, and I would expect that this year that we would put on in the sales rep area probably in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 more and at least 1 or 2 more clinical specialists, so about 5 new people this year.
Okay, that's very useful. I know you didn't quite get into the detail on the Ditex and syringe sales, but you have reported them previously. Are you able to break out the unit sales of non-divert products, mainly the Ditec and the syringe sales?
Sure. We sold right at about 2,300 units total That includes the Ditec and the syringes in it. Gosh, they're small. So it's not an enormous. It was right at just slightly over 2,300. So if you take the 2,145, you got roughly about 150 that's in syringes and Ditec.
Okay, I'm just looking at the previous. So around how many was it? Around 150.
We had 2,145 in the Ditec itself, and we did slightly over 2,300, 2,311 to be exact, total units.
Okay, so it's around the 150, 160 mark, which is what the last two quarters have been.
Yeah, it's 166 units of other. So the other is Ditec and syringes, Ditec being bigger than the syringes.
Okay.
So of that 160, it's usually about one-third, two-third. Two-thirds of it's Ditec and one-third of it's syringes. Gosh, all of that revenue combined in those two entities doesn't make up, clearly it's not 10% of our total. And
yeah,
it fluctuates a whole lot. You know, it kind of goes up and down because those are part of the franchise. And it depends. I'll give you an example of why does Ditec swing a little bit. Teaching institutions use Ditec quite a bit, particularly when new fellows come in, because they want them to learn how to inject, and the Ditec helps them to see how much they're injecting every time. As they get better, so you'll see a rash of them used when the new trainees come in, and then as they get better and better, they slow down the use of it. So it kind of fluctuates up and down a bit.
Yeah, no, I guess I was just trying to, it's interesting to monitor how that product was going to go and fit into the suite of different products. Final point I just want to see is in terms of the GPO strategy, part of it is that the view or the hope that the accounts will be much easier and faster to get on board. I know it's early days, but in the conversions that you have seen, has it led to the expected reduction in complexity of getting new accounts on board? I think the comment was you're hoping to get it down from 4 months to 2 months.
Yeah, it's a bit early still, too. What I would say is this is, yes, we've been very pleased with the people that are in the pipeline. We still have to go through new technology committee. Even though it's been already approved, we still have to go through new tech in each hospital. Gosh, I wish it was a blanket that they would allow it faster. We are getting to evaluation much faster. We're also getting into doors that were previously closed, where because we didn't have a GPO agreement, we couldn't even get in the door. So I'll need a couple more quarters to give you a reliable figure on how much it's improved the acquiring of a new hospital. How much faster has that gotten? We believe it'll be faster. I don't have enough experience to point to a definitive number yet, though.
Okay. Okay, that's useful. Thanks very much, Mike.
You bet. Thanks, Maddie.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ian Moore, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, good day, Mike. A number of evaluating hospitals that was normally on your 4C release. I didn't see it this time.
Yeah, we sometimes we put in pipeline. We didn't put it in this time. The pipeline evaluating, those to your point, Ian, the evaluating hospitals, those that have taken a sample that are in the process of getting approval, that continues to be double digits, which is where we expect it to be. It goes up and down, and we expect, actually, that may improve. What we did notice this quarter is there are some accounts that now, because of the GPO agreement in place, they will buy their samples because they believe that it drives the physician to a more balanced decision-making process. That won't be all. It's hard for us to judge it today, but, gosh, the ones in the pipeline for us is above 15 right now. So we expect it to be somewhere between 15 and 30 all the time, and it fluctuates up and down, but it's above 15 for us right now.
Right. That's all for me. I think all the other questions are asked. It's always a bit of a worry when you drop things off that you were previously disclosing, I have to say. I think it was 24
well,
I've got here in the last
definitely
time.
Definitely evaluate looking at it in the future and making sure that we include that.
Mm. Okay. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone and wait for your name to be announced. Next question comes from Ian Hyde, another private investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mike. Ian Hyde, we met at the briefing that you did a couple of months ago in Sydney. It's, just a few questions, and it follows on from a lot of what has already been asked. One thing is, and again, with the quarterly 4C data that you're putting out, you used to put in history of the regions and how close they were going to profitability or trading and profitability, plus the hospitals in the valley, which has already been mentioned, plus also the breakup of the Divert and Ditech sales. If they could be included going forward, that would be great because it does raise questions as to why it's not there, but it also is very useful to track into how the company's going. But back to the actual regions, there were two regions that were profitable. Are there any more that have moved into profitability or getting close?
Yeah, so in terms of the territories, we're very pleased with where the territories are and how the territories are progressing. So we've chosen to not get into all the territory level detail as the units grow because they're more balanced across multiple territories. Certainly, we have more territories that are at higher rates of maturity. We have three territories that are at cash flow positive, and we certainly have others that we're very pleased with the progress that they've made and how they look toward cash flow positive. In terms of your other question around Ditech, I tell you, the only reason that we've taken off total units is it seemed like people I was getting a lot of questions on total units versus just the Divert Plus units. The Divert Plus units clearly is the driver of all the revenue. Gosh, Ditech and syringes less than 10% of total revenue. International units well less than 10% of total revenue. That's why we will always be very clear about how many Divert Plus units there are, because that's what drives the total revenue number. But it's a point well taken. It's been brought up a couple of times to make sure that we give the total number of units so that people can see what Ditech and syringes look like. It's just a smaller piece of the business. It fluctuates a lot up and down, but it's a really good comment. So it's come up a couple of times. So certainly something that we'll take under advisement, and I appreciate the comment.
Cool. Okay, thank you. And now on to Premier. If there's more, I guess, colour or background information as to just what, I guess, either services or recommendations or protocol advice they may give the hospitals in the group as to facilitate sales, or it's just purely in layman's terms, they've got approved a product and now everyone else has just got to make their own way. I know they've done that trial, pardon me, looking at, say, the impact on reducing AKI, using it in the protocols and so on, but is there any more that they actually do? Or is it just that, well, here we are, guys, go out and knock yourselves out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the question, as I understand, is what else do the JPOs do beyond just get a contract out there? What else do they do to help push the product? So first and foremost, the four contracts we have, the most progressive, the most advanced group is Premier. They're also the largest, and they're very advanced. So what do I mean by advanced? There's a lot of different assets and tools that they use to communicate to their membership. The first and most important, or I should say two that have already taken place, is one is a joint press release that we issued and that Premier approved, and we released it in Australia last quarter in Q4. We also released it in the United States. It was a really important press release in the United States for us, and it's one that becomes a sales tool for our sales reps. Why is that important? Because it flags breakthrough technology. So breakthrough technology is, they only give 30 of those per year at Premier. And for example, they contract everything from food service all the way through orthopedic implants to heart implants. But they only give one breakthrough technology to all heart products. Only one gets selected every year. So they have special announcements that they use for their membership to announce breakthrough technologies. We got that. many of you have seen, we created a selling tool that was actually made with Premier. So Premier's logo is on it, as is ours. And it uses the burden of illness study, as well as description of the breakthrough. And it has the contract number, our contract number on it. So that's another tool that they use. Actually, every month in 2019, we have got distribution within, they've got multiple different types of ways that they communicate with their membership. Everything from blast emails to newsletters to focused papers. And we've got different things planned monthly throughout 2019 to communicate to the membership. And then they have their big annual meeting. We've got representation there in the breakthrough group, which is only 30 focused companies that get to go there, as well as we'll have a booth at that. And we'll be a participant in one of their main presentations. Actually, Dr. Anand Prasad, one of our key opinion leading physicians, was accepted to present there on the burden of illness. That's Premier's data, but on the burden of illness. So we've got a lot of things planned with Premier. Another one of our GPOs, which I can't mention because contractually I can't mention who they are. They're not near as big as Premier. They have similar types of tools, but not near as many. We won't do tools with them like every month or as many as we have with Premier, but we do have them every quarter where we work with them to push it out to their membership.
Okay, thank you. And regarding the data bank, are we getting close, or do you have any idea when some real-world data will be available and can be issued, published?
Yeah, well, we have had two real-world data sets that have already been published. One of them is from St. Mary's Hospital in Huntington, West Virginia. We've put that up in some of our previous slide decks. That's actually a premier hospital. Another one is from Northland Hospital in Houston, Texas, and that's been one of our previous slide decks. We do expect additional ones. Many of the papers that I mentioned earlier, when there was a question that from John Hester about publications, gosh, the three that we have at the NCDR, two at ACC, we expect both of those we expect numerous of those to have comments about AKI reduction in them.
Sure. And back to R&D, I think you did mention at some point that you're looking at building new products that can be used for other procedures besides the one you're currently using. I know it's future, but any comments or information around what you're working on?
Yeah, the one I would comment on, because we've already flagged this in the past, is the power injector. It does go into new markets. I'll give you a couple of new markets. So first and foremost, when we launch that product, going into the market that we're in makes tons of sense, and there's quite a bit of there's a number of hospitals that use it in where we are now. And we don't, in other words, injecting coronary arteries. So that's a market we'll go after. But beyond that, how does it open up new markets for us? When you look at interventional radiology or CT angiography, valve replacement, many of those procedures use contrast media or dye to illuminate different parts of the body. And they use power injectors to inject in a lot of those scenarios. So having a power injectable, compatible format will allow us to not only expand in the market that we're in today, but also go into brand new procedures that we currently are not in.
Would you have any stab as to a number of new procedures then that is possible?
That's a great question. What we'll do is, as we get FDA approval on that platform, we certainly will describe what that opportunity will be and how we'll go after it.
Sure. Okay. And just lastly, with the expansion into the EU, you've said that you're using the direct sales force process in the US, but you're contracting with parties in Europe. Are you going to be using a different model there, or is that too early to know what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, great question. I'm glad you asked that clarifying question. For us in Europe, we're only in two countries right now, and Italy really is the only one that's pure commercialization. The UK is actually more of a strategic play to get NICE approval. But so let's talk about Italy. Italy for us is we've got a hybrid model there where we've got a direct person that helps us to manage a distributor. So it is a hybrid. We do have a direct, but it's managing the distributor, and that distributor's got people throughout Italy and a number of different sales reps throughout the country. So we do anticipate that as we continue to grow in Europe that it would be a hybrid model, a mixture of a few direct people working with international distributors. You get a lot more options with international distributors, good ones in Europe that do that. In the United States, you don't have as many options for that. There's not as many cardiology distributors in the United States as in other spaces, like orthopedics are some good ones, but not in cardiology in the U.S. But in Europe, there still are some really good distributors that work in cardiology, and we do anticipate that we would continue to expand a hybrid organization in Europe.
Okay, and I guess it's probably impossible to answer, but what sort of cost would that incur onto your profitability? I was looking at basic at the moment, it's 70% margin, I think, on your current divert plus to sale to cost. So I assume that would obviously be impacted in the EU.
Yeah, I can comment on Italy because we're obviously commercial in Italy, although it's very small numbers. But we are commercial and we work with that a distributor. So distributor pricing is, as you might expect, so somebody else is taking on the sales. Somebody else is taking on accounts receivable and billing. So that's what they do in Italy. So our transfer price to the distributor is usually at about half of the price that we sell it at in the United States. So in other words, if in the United States, our average selling price is in the $350 range. We're transferring in the $175 range to Europe. Now, of course, we don't have selling costs in Europe except for one person that is working with the distributor. So much less carrying cost on that product. Now, what do they sell it for? In Europe, they're selling it actually to the customer at about the same price that we sell it in the United States. So the retail price to the customer is about the same.
Okay, so basically then simple math, 70% based upon a 50% sale, you got a 20% margin.
Yeah, but we do a little bit better than 70%, but yes. And there's a cost. If we went direct, the cost would be much higher. You'd have to get to a much higher level of sales in order to break even.
Sure, sure. No, I'm just trying to understand. So, but, all right, look, thank you very much. Appreciate
you bet. Thank you.
Comment.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand back to Mr. McCormick for closing remarks.
I'd like to thank everybody for calling in today. We look forward to giving you updates in future quarters as we continue to grow our sales, and thank you for your continued support of Osprey.